Okay, welcome back. Pull up a chair, sit down on the sofa, roll back in the recliner, and open your mind, open your ears, and we're going to take some, several journeys tonight on a number of different roads, all leading to the same destination. And that destination is we now have physics, we have proof, we have mathematical formula, which describes in no uncertain terms that when we die, it's not over. It may just be, in fact, beginning. Back with us tonight in our series of conversations, and they have been really remarkable, Michael Roll, Ron Pearson, physicist from England, and joining us, the most eminent and world-renowned Dr. Peter Wadhams. We're going to have Michael Roll give us a formal introduction for Dr. Wadhams, who is an extraordinary man who has made his mark in the world of mainstream science, such as it is. He wants to step forward tonight with his colleagues, Roll and Pearson, and set some things straight. What we have now is the beginning of basically, I don't want to call it a revolution, but certainly a forward thrust by people within and without mainstream science, which is designed to roll back, if not, frankly, destroy some of the long-held and dearly held tenets and precepts of mainstream science behind which so many people stand and deny the whole world of what we commonly call the paranormal and life after death, which, again, we now have a workable mathematical physics formula to substantiate. Welcome back, Michael Roll. How's the connection? Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Hello, Jeff. Can you hear me?
I do, and you are alive and well in the middle of the night, as are our two friends, Mr. Pearson and Dr. Wadhams in the UK. Thanks for getting up so very early again, Michael, and for being with us tonight. These programs we've done, these conversations, have really electrified people around the world, frankly, and I've gotten no end of email about it. When are you going to have them back? And I'm wondering if you can, before we get to Ron and Peter, in fact, let's go ahead and welcome them first, and I'll get back to my question to you. Ron Pearson, how are you? And are you up and at 'em over there?
Yes, hello, thank you. I'm fine, yes, thank you.
Goodness, you are about jumped through my head with that. You're right
there. It's too loud, is it?
No, it's fine, just fine. And Dr. Peter Wadhams, are you there, sir?
Yes, good morning. Good evening to you.
Whatever, good middle of the night to you. And thanks for being with us, Peter, very, very much. Michael, if we can, just let me ask the generic question. Since our first conversation, how much progress have you and Ron Pearson and others made in terms of getting that door to open, that door which will bring you all to the prominence that you deserve so richly?
Well, it's quite staggering what's happened since we first did the broadcast back in January of this year. Mainly, the most important thing that's happened to me in my 20-year fight for a balance on media outlets happened only last month. I got the headlines in front of me from a national paper in England, which is very unusual. A Nobel laureate for physics has come out and confirmed what I've been saying all my life, in fact, that the so-called paranormal,
yes,
is a branch of physics, subatomic,
yeah,
physics. We're dealing with the invisible part of the universe. And, of course, it's taken the Twin Towers tragedy to make the scientists and philosophers, indeed, to speak out now so that everybody in the world will find out. Because it's dead easy to block myself, who's an art student, and Ron Pearson, who's a retired scientist. But blocking a current Nobel laureate for physics is just not going to work. And, of course, it's blown wide open. I've got the headlines in front of me. I'll just read them.
Yeah, yes.
Paranormal. How this Nobel Prize-winning professor has shocked the scientific world with his belief in the existence of psychic powers. Now, that really has taken the pressure off me. I'm no longer fighting alone. And all we have to do, Jeff, as you know, is just present our case. We haven't got to sell it. When people have access to our secular scientific case for survival,
yes,
they all come with us, apart from those who have something to lose, which is only about 1% of the population. It's a minute percentage of the population who are going to,
right,
lose from this.
It is really so very natural that this continue on. and that there is, in fact, maybe a whole world of physics undreamed of to support, sustain, and further corroborate what you have already put together. Ron Pearson, how about that? A Nobel Prize-winning man coming forward.
Ryan Josephson is, in fact, the person concerned, and we did know beforehand that he was of this opinion, but this is the first time he's come out with it, and it's very encouraging indeed. Let's hope a lot more do the same thing.
How has your life changed, Ron Pearson, since our first broadcast? Put this on the table, which, again, for those of you who may be new to this whole subject, is real simple. We have now logic, we have science, we have mathematical formula, which points quite clearly to the fact that we do not die and go away. We stay on, continue on, and maybe that, in fact, is what we do most of the time. Maybe this is just the little sideshow, the little diversion. How have things changed for you, Ron?
Well, they haven't changed for this year particularly for me, but things have changed over the last 15 years dramatically, because 15 years ago I was the same as any other scientist. I just didn't believe paranormal effects were real. I thought they were a lot of nonsense.
Yes.
It wasn't until I went into the theory of things. I started by trying to understand certain physics problems, certain problems in cosmology physics which haven't been solved. And when I came out with a solution to these problems, the paranormal appeared as part of the theory, and I had to accept it then.
It's very interesting, Michael Roll, how that did work out. When Ron put the formula together, as he said, paranormal activities were actually part and parcel of it, and it worked perfectly. Sometimes the solutions to these mind-boggling enigmas are right in front of our faces.
Exactly, yeah. So you see, what was the problem here was these early pioneers, Sir William Crookes and Professor Charles Richet, did these fantastic experiments, really revolutionary experiments, where repeatable experiments under laboratory conditions, some people who had died came into their laboratory proving they survived. And the only reason this didn't break through 100 years ago is because they didn't have the mathematical theory to back up the experiments. Because every experiment must have a mathematical theory. And now it's coming through. 100 years later, the missing mathematics, thanks to Ron and other scientists, are putting two and two together and at last making four.
To put it in as simple a terms as we can to bring our listeners along who have not been with us before, who are new, and we get new listeners all the time. If you would, Michael, just give me a real simple word's eye view of Ron's work and the idea that there is an ether, if you will, a whole nother medium out there from which all of this may well emanate.
Well, it's quite simple in layman's terms. If we survive death, I mean, the physical body packs in and the physical brain, because it's left there when we die. But what Ron is saying and the other scientists, then something must break away from the physical body. And even though we're secularists, we're putting forward a non-religious case for survival, we are agreeing, we're putting our hands up, that the religionists are right about us having a soul. And that soul must be made of something. That's what we're saying. It's not an airy-fairy thing floating about. It must be made of something.
Fine.
So it's made of much finer subatomic particles than our physical bodies are made of. That's all. And it's beyond our five physical senses, and we can't see it.
Go ahead.
Sorry. And if we're dealing with something that's beyond our five physical senses, we have to work with an instrument to bring that into play, like a microscope.
The persecution of Sir William Crookes and Richet and others, which we'll talk about, Sir Oliver Lodge.
Well, it's been appalling, and that's why I'm so keen for Dr. Peter Wadhams to come onto our program, because for 20 years, while I've been trying to break through, we've had so-called experts being wheeled onto television program after television program, just tearing into Sir William Crookes and Sir Oliver Lodge and Professor Charles Richet without any scientists or even a chap like myself being allowed on to defend these scientists. And that's the main reason why Dr. Peter Wadham is on tonight from Cambridge University, for the first time ever, to defend these great scientists, our pioneers of radio and television and subatomic physics, from these vicious attacks. And that's why I'm so thrilled to have him on.
Well, we'll get to him in just a couple of minutes. We have to take a break here momentarily and come right back. Some names you'll be hearing tonight, friends, again, Sir William Crookes, Professor Charles Richet, that's R-I-C-H-E-T, and Sir Oliver Lodge. Crookes, Richet, and Lodge. Keep those names in mind. We're going to learn some fascinating things about those gentlemen tonight, those genius gentlemen scientists who have been so abused for so long. We are, as they used to say in the old Soviet Union, rehabilitating them on this program. Beginning January this year, we're going to keep it up until these men are given their just and due positions in the pantheon of brilliant scientists of our species. We'll be back in just a minute with Michael Roll, Ron Pearson, and Dr. Peter Wadham. And welcome back. Three outstanding human beings on the program tonight, including one brilliant scientist, Dr. Peter Wadhams, who is really world-renowned in his field. We're going to talk about him in just a minute and then talk to him right after that. Michael Roll, if you would be so kind as to give us a little introduction to Dr. Wadhams, I think it would be appropriate for you since you work so closely with him now and have just had such extraordinary conversations.
Yes, well, Dr. Peter Wadhams qualified at Cambridge University from the Cavendish Laboratory, which is where Professor Josephson is. And he's one of the world's foremost experts on global warming. That's his speciality, and that's how he keeps popping up on our television over here in England. Mm-hmm. And we've emailed each other. We've never actually met, but we email each other quite a bit about the wonderful work of Sir William Crookes and Sir Oliver Lodge, and how he's as disgusted as I am about the vicious attacks that have been aimed at them without them being able to defend themselves. And he probably knows more about Crookes and Lodge than I do.
All right, well, very good. Let's say hello again to Dr. Peter Wadhams. And for those of you saying, what's that last name again? It's W-A-D-H-A-M-S, Wadhams. Peter, hi.
Hi, hello.
Still awake?
Yes, let me emphasize, I'm just an ordinary working scientist in a different field from psychical research. I have read the literature on the subject and do find it very convincing.
Well, it's very humble of you, but don't underestimate your contribution. By the way, if I might, before we get into our conversation, there is so much talk over here in the States about global warming. There has been such hay made of it by politicians and others, environmental groups and so forth. If you could, just for a minute or two, give us a summation of where we are. How much do we know about it? Is it real, or is it just a normal aberration of our planet's geological history and so forth?
Well, it's certainly real. There's over at least the last 150 years, there's been a substantial warming going on of the whole planet, which is greater than the fluctuations which have been occurred in the past due to natural factors. And I think most scientists would agree that it is attributable to the additional carbon dioxide that's been put into the air by man's activities.
Uh-huh.
And we now have CO2 levels that are higher than they've ever been over the past 500,000 years. And there's no way that, given the way that CO2 causes absorption of radiation from the Earth, that, that this could happen without a warming going on. And the warming fits very well the models, computer models, of what ought to be happening. And so I think it's pretty conclusive that global warming is due to man's activities, and we can quite reasonably well predict how it's going to go in the next few decades.
Which is not particularly good.
No, well, for most of the world, it's not good, and certainly in aspects like rising sea levels, it's bad for everyone. For some countries, of course, global warming can be thought of as an advantage, certainly for a country like Britain, perhaps. But for most of the poorer countries of the world, which are already suffering from drought, further warming of those countries is going to be disastrous.
All right. Very well said. And last quick addendum to my initial question. This has all been borne out through, I would imagine, corings of ice and so forth. Can we go back and read the climatological record that way?
Yes, we can read the record back to about 300,000 years from cawing through the ice caps in Greenland and Antarctica, and looking at the oxygen isotope ratios in the ice, which tells us the air temperature at the time that the snow fell. And this gives us a climate record, which is very, very high resolution, and it goes back a third of a million years. So we can see that the record of the various ice ages, and we can also see what carbon dioxide levels were in the past from the little air bubbles caught in the ice. So we do know that, thanks to man's activities, our CO2 levels are now higher than they've ever been due to any natural fluctuations, and our air temperatures are now shooting upwards in response.
So nothing remotely like reading tea leaves. This is a high-resolution record you're able to consult.
Oh, yes, and it's, the record is getting higher resolution in the sense that scientists can now slice up these cores in a much finer way than in the past. So it's possible to look at climate fluctuations that occurred over periods of only a few years, thousands of years in the past.
Oh, extraordinary.
That wasn't possible before.
That is remarkable to be able to go back thousands of years and read actual fluctuations just over a couple of years. Just amazing.
Yes, it's certainly given a whole new dimension to climate history.
As we go to our break, let me please duck in one more quick question. It is now said that the available oxygen on the planet, especially in urban areas to us humans to breathe, has declined significantly for a variety of reasons. Used to be in the 20% range. Some cities now, I guess, have oxygen levels down 18-19% of available oxygen to breathe. Your studies encompass that issue as well?
Well, no, I think that's more of a local question. I think we're in big cities where there's very large amounts of oxygen consumption from industry and cars and so on, you can get temporary reductions in oxygen levels. But I don't think it's the case for the planet as a whole that there's any reduction in oxygen levels.
Okay. Encouraging. Good to hear. All right. Stand by. We'll be right back with Ron Pearson, Michael Roll, and Dr. Peter Wadhams. We're going to ask him, well, we'll start with Michael and Ron, then we'll come right back to Peter. We're going to talk about Sir William Crookes, who he was, and why we should care about this man, and much more. As we continue, I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're here. And don't forget the website, Rentz.com. News that is definitely not always politically correct. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Over 16,000 stories, articles, essays, special reports on the website for you right now. And uploading news around the clock at Rentz.com. Okay, and welcome back. Jeff Rentz with Michael Roll, Dr. Peter Wadhams, and Ron Pearson. Okay, Ron Pearson, in your primary years as a scientist, did you spend much time thinking about the works of Crookes and Lodge and Richet and so forth? When did you come across the work of Sir William Crookes?
No, I didn't. I only knew about Crookes inventing the cathode ray tube and various other things. I didn't really know anything about the work they did on the paranormal side of things, because, of course, this is not given to us as students. We're just not told about things
right.
like that.
And yet in the literature, there is much data available. There are many stories about the spiritualist movement in Great Britain in the 1800s. There's a lot of talk about that, Michael Roll. It's something that was, I don't want to say big business, but it was extremely popular. And in the parlors back then, that was sort of the thing to get involved with amongst the wealthy and the common folks.
Well, that's it. In the middle of Victorian times, so-called spiritualism was taking off in a very big way. And this is what thrilled the scientific establishment when they heard that Sir William Crookes, such an eminent scientist, had come into the movement, not the spiritualist movement as such, but to debunk the whole thing about survival after death and so-called spirits. But luckily for posterity, Sir William Crookes came across a medium called a materialization medium. And these mediums can actually prove survival. The others just give good evidence, but not a materialization medium. And the medium he came across, called Florey Cook, he did repeatable experiments under laboratory conditions.
Right.
in his own laboratory, in his own house. And somebody who once lived on Earth came back on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And he invited his scientific colleagues to witness the phenomena. And he certainly proved survival by experimentation in the 1870s.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1874, he felt safe enough to publish, and he did, in the Quarterly Journal of Science. And as you can imagine, that really put the cat among the pigeons, because orthodox science is starting from the base that we don't survive death.
Precisely.
And then international teams of scientists, after that publication, carried out their own experiments. The French team under Professor Charles Richet, a Nobel laureate for physics, actually carried out experiments, and a Canadian team, Dr. Glenn Hamilton, and a German team, Professor Schrenck-Notzing. So we had the proof coming through, the experimental proof, but as I said, it lacked the mathematics.
Yeah.
And this is a quote from Professor Charles Richet. There is ample proof that experimental materializations should take definite rank as a scientific fact. I mean, that's a hell of a statement from a Nobel laureate for medical science.
That's an overwhelming statement.
So we've had the experimental proof, make no mistake about it, that we survived death.
Yeah,
and now at last we've got the missing mathematics coming through, so we've got the two together.
Yes,
and
indeed.
And that's it. You see, it's the same as the world being round. The Greeks actually proved the world was round by mathematics.
Yeah.
And then when Magellan sailed round the world in 1522, that was the experiment. It's the experiment and the maths. And it was good night, the flat earthers.
took a long time, but it did work out.
Well, now we've got the two now. We've got the experimental proof and the mathematics. Yeah. It should be good night, all the terrible killings going on.
Oh, indeed. Dr. Peter Wadhams, tell us in your view of the accomplishments and the man, Sir William Crookes. He is a man in our literature in the States here that, aside from perhaps advanced high school, secondary level students, the name wouldn't be familiar. And in college, yes, but I'm not sure his position in the history books here, other than the commonly held belief that he was a little bit off the wall, as we like to say here. Tell us about your views, Sir William Crookes.
Well, Crookes was a very brave man. He was a very eminent physicist. He was Fellow of the Royal Society. As Ron has said, he was inventor of the cathode ray tube, one of the original researchers on cathode rays, which led to the discovery of the electron, invented the Crookes radiometer for measuring radiation levels. He was in every way an eminent late Victorian physicist. And so he was attracted to psychical research by these reports of very extraordinary effects involving mediums, and he very bravely went carried out his own investigations into them and published the positive results in the Quarterly Journal of Science. And this was one of the, it was these extraordinary results that helped inspire in 1882 the foundation of the Society for Psychical Research, which had branches in Britain and in America, and included amongst its members in those early days some of the most eminent scientists of the time, including J.J. Thompson, who later discovered the electron, and also many distinguished writers and even politicians, including Balfour, who was later Prime Minister. So it was an effort that was very widely felt in the scientific community of late Victorian Britain that had to be made, because here were some phenomena that were being seen and observed, and that nobody could understand, seemed to lie outside the range of what physics could explain, and yet were real. And so Crookes went in there and investigated, one of the people investigated was this medium, Florence Cook, who was able to produce these very extraordinary physical effects. And another was a medium called Daniel Dunglass Hume, who was a very extraordinary person, the sort of person who appears maybe once in a century, who is able to perform very amazing physical effects. He, for instance, in Hume's presence in high light levels, he actually levitated. That's something which, of course, even modern science doesn't accept ever happens. But,
I'm very glad it did. Yes, Stan, it did. We'll come right back. I want to recap that a little bit and talk a little bit more about Daniel Hume. Now, there's a man that is a subject worthy of an entire program, an extraordinary person, to say the least. And we'll come back and hear more from Dr. Peter Wadhams about Hume, and maybe see if Michael and Ron want to add in to that whole thing. So Sir William Crookes, one of the pillars of science, late Victorian physics, walked right into the den of spiritualism to knock it down and came away with evidence that he couldn't deny. Be right back with more. And welcome back. Talking to the eminent scientist, Dr. Peter Wadhams, about many things, and Michael Rohl, Ron Pearson, back for yet another conversation about life after death. All right, Peter, that's a good intro to Sir William Crookes. He is a man, again, who has been disparaged greatly. The attacks upon him began at what point in his career?
Well, at the time that he published, people felt these phenomena are so extraordinary that we just can't believe that they took place. And in those days, this was a great difficulty because nobody ever suspected scientists in general of fraud, because there weren't many scientists in the world.
Uh-huh.
You had to be very dedicated to be a scientist.
That's right. There are far more now than there were back then.
Yes. And in those days, certainly those who attained the eminence of Crookes, nobody would possibly attack their reputation or suspect them of being fraudulent or being deluded.
Uh-huh.
But in this particular case, because the phenomena were so absolutely mind-boggling, the question arose that was he being deluded by somebody who was faking where he didn't spot the fake. But the more serious allegation was, which was quite a cowardly one, was made after his death, which was that he'd been having an affair with this medium, and this was why...
Why he made these
positive reports on her. But that really was simply an attack after his death, which really had no basis in fact at all. And in fact, many of the phenomena that he observed were on experiments done in his own home laboratory, so that
Right. Certainly
faking was out of the question. And the question of an affair was something which anybody who knew him and knew how very serious he was about Everything he did would obviously realize was just completely nonsense.
The whole approach of defaming someone who has passed on is truly cowardly and then some. It is one of the most vile attacks that someone can sustain after they're gone, not here to counter it.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
And we've seen that with other people. It's an old tactic, but just wait till they die and then rip them up.
Well, it's still the case in the field of psychical research in many cases. I'm not a psychical researcher myself, but having read the literature and seen some of the personal attacks that are made on the people who have carried out very serious, very carefully done research that's with every possible double-blind precaution to
yes,
make sure
yes.
that this is done in an absolutely solidly careful way.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because the results come out positive and can't be explained, rather than accept the challenge that here's a scientific phenomenon which has to be explained and fitted into some new field of scientific theory, people either attack or ignore the people who did the research.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's at all a decent way to act, but it is the way in many ways in which science acts to try to avoid having to confront the evidence from psychical research.
It often seems, Peter, that science spends half of its energy trying to preserve, protect, and enforce the status quo than forging ahead, if they do it all in some cases. And your point about all the double-blind and scientific protocols having been utilized is an excellent one. In fact, some of those tests, I would imagine, were even done under more stringent guidelines than some traditional science.
They are, and certainly a lot of psychological experiments today are done under very loose, certainly things like drug testing experiments, often funded by drug companies, are done under very loose protocols, and yet nobody complains about those. If you look at some of the very best...
As we say over here, Peter, follow the money if you want to see how those drug tests are done. Just follow the money.
Yes, if you look at some of the most serious work being done today in psychical research, for instance, some of the best results at the moment are coming from the work at Princeton by Professor Jahn on psychokinesis, trying to change the scoring rate of a random number generator.
Right.
And those effects are very tiny, something like 1 in 10,000 of the numbers are changed by thinking at it. But the effect shouldn't be there at all. If it's there at all, it's something of crucial importance. And doing millions of tests showed that this effect is happening. And this is a very extremely careful study done over many, many years. And it deserves attention by the whole scientific world, because here are some results which are absolutely incontrovertible, that a phenomenon is occurring which is unexplained. And it should therefore be a topic which science takes on as one of its most major concerns, and instead, in general, it's ignored and very poorly funded, and scientific philosophers don't really take account of psychic phenomena in thinking about how do we generate a grand unified theory of the universe and so on. They simply leave those things out, although the evidence for their existence is very convincing.
And as Ron Pearson and Michael Roll have explained on the program before, it is so simple and so elementary, my dear Watson, that it's just mind-boggling, really. We had, by the way, on the program on September 28th, Dean Radin and Roger Nelson, both working very closely on the random number generating. They're leading that whole experimental thrust, and they were... amazingly candid about what happened on September 11th with the results of their random number generators. I believe they have 35 of them, about three dozen now, scattered around the world. So your point is very well taken. Michael Roll, if we can get back to you for a minute, I'd like to hear a little bit more about Daniel Hume. Our American audience is largely... they haven't heard of him over here, but I have read about the man, and he was something else. Tell us a little bit more about Daniel Hume.
Yes, and he did these extraordinary experiments with this medium Hume. One of them, he actually managed to have an accordion playing within a Faraday cage by itself.
Go
back to Peter, because I think Peter knows a little bit more about the experiments with Hume than I do.
Good. Peter, what about this? Now, for our listeners out there, if you would just kindly explain what a Faraday cage is very quickly.
A Faraday cage is just a container, a cage made of very fine metal mesh, which excludes possibility of electromagnetic radiation getting
usually
through
copper
it.
Wire.
Yes. So the experiments that Crookes did with Hume, because Hume was this extraordinary once in a century person who could produce very incredible, literally incredible physical effects. Crookes was able to do experiments like setting up a spring balance where one end would be a table or a board, and he would ask Hume to try to lift this without touching it, and you would find very large changes in weight of this structure, several pounds. And then you had the case where he asked Hume to try to make an accordion play inside this cage without touching it at all, and, uh-huh. and it did so. And Crookes observed these things, and he was not a credulous person. These experiments were very carefully done, and Crookes just simply reported them, and that's what caused a public outcry. How could these things happen? He also observed this levitation experiment. He reported that he rose 18 inches off the ground by passing my hands under his feet, round him, and over his head when he was in the air.
Now, this was a sort of scientific report. You can see why it would have been very difficult for people to accept this. But he was simply soberly reporting some absolutely extraordinary phenomena that Hume was able to achieve, which still remain a complete challenge to science. Psychical research normally deals with tiny effects which perhaps everybody is capable of achieving but normally remain undetectable, but shouldn't be there at all. But very, very occasionally you get somebody along who is able to achieve these quite extraordinary effects, and those are real gems and need to be investigated seriously by scientists. And in the case of Hume, there was Crookes was there to do it.
The one incident I recall reading about Hume's life, and I think I have it right. You may correct me if I'm wrong, please. He levitated and actually levitated himself, floated partway out of a window at out of a second-story dwelling, if I remember correctly. Was that accurate, or is that just a folklore?
It was reported. I mean, this wasn't something that Crookes
reported. This wasn't a Crookes observed experiment, but this was reported that he was actually able to levitate himself and float out of a second-story window, much to the utter chagrin of the large number of people gathered in the room.
Well, yes, he apparently floated out of one window and in through another one.
That's what it was, yeah.
But, of course, if these were completely isolated cases, then one would think, well, here was a very, very clever imposter. But it's not something, I mean, even if one goes back, of course, to the Gospels, you have Jesus walking on water, and you'd have occasional cases through history where extraordinary cases are observed by very large numbers of people, like cases of various saints who are reported to have levitated.
There was a saint, I've forgotten his name now, but he was observed to have levitated up to the top of some small cathedral or church by his fellow brethren, and that was written up amongst the literature, and is still available. All right, we'll pause and come right back. We're going to talk next hour a little bit more about the mechanics of life after death at the subatomic level with Ron Pearson and Michael Roll and Dr. Peter Wadhams. Jeff Rentz, glad you were here. Stay tuned. It's an unusual program with some extraordinary men, and we shall continue.